Well, today we're going to start a brand new Bible study sermon series on the life of King David. Now, in the ancient texts that exist to today, and this is biblical texts or any other ancient texts, the life of King David is the longest narrative of any person that was an actual historical figure from the ancient times. And it exists in our Bible. The story of King David exists. I have glitter all over my face. And it's reflecting off my nose. That is strange. So, the life of King David is written in 1 and 2 Samuel. Now, 1 and 2 Samuel is actually one book. But it was written on scrolls in the Old Testament time. They had these scrolls. And scrolls could only be so big before they were unmanageable. And so they took the life of David and they wrote it on two different scrolls. That's how big the life of David is. And we're going to start in verse 16 where we actually first see David in the book of 1 Samuel. But before we get to chapter 16, I need to tell you a little bit about what happens before chapter 16 so you don't lose anything. There was this lady, her name was Hannah. She wanted a child. She was barren. And she prayed to God, please let me have a child. And God granted her wish. And she her request from God. She said, Lord, if you give me this child, I will dedicate this child to you. The Lord granted that request, gave her a child. The child was named Samuel, and Samuel was dedicated to God, became a judge in the Old Testament. He was actually the last of the Old Testament judges. And as God gave Hannah the announcement that she would have a child, she said, blessed am I, because this child is going to be important for a king of Israel. Because we're going to have a king. Israel's going to have a king. And it's not going to be like all the other kings that exist around there. It's going to be a king devoted to God, a king that doesn't just look out for himself, but looks out for his people, a true righteous king. That's who this is going to be. So Samuel, dedicated to God, the last judge, was told by God that he should anoint Saul to be king. So the first king of Israel was indeed King Saul. And Samuel anointed him. And he was a king, but he turned out to be a horrible king. So God withdrew from Saul, and God told Samuel, there's another king coming, and this king is going to be from the house of Jesse. And that's where we pick up the story in 1 Samuel chapter 16. Saul has been told, you're not going to be king, or maybe he hasn't been told yet. Samuel knows that Saul is no longer going to be king. It's going to go to king someone else from Jesse's household. And so now Samuel is on his way to Jesse's household to anoint a new king. All right, you all with me so far? So that's where the beginning of chapter, that took 15 chapters. I told it to you in 2 minutes. You should be lucky. All right, so now he's on his way to Jesse's house to anoint a new king. And he says to the Lord, he says, how in the world am I going to do this? If Saul finds out who is king, if Saul finds out that I'm on my way to Jesse's house to anoint a new king, he's going to be very, very upset with me and he's going to kill me. And so the Lord tells Samuel, just take a heifer, say you're going there to do a sacrifice. So Saul is on his way to do a sacrifice. But he's really on a real mission to find the new king. And as he arrives, now this is in chapter 16, verse 6, when Samuel arrives, when they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab standing there. Now that's one of the sons of Jesse. And he thought to himself, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. Now we don't know a lot about Eliab. We know that he was a son of Jesse, but I can imagine that there was something about his physical appearance that made him look kingly. Because if you looked at all the kings and the way that kings were developed and how they came about in the ancient Near East at the time, of all the other places that had kings, it was usually a huge warrior, somebody who had strength, somebody who had power, somebody who had a commanding authority. So he sees Eliab, and there must have been something about Eliab. Maybe he was a big guy. You know that Henry VIII was a big, powerful, important king that lived in England. He was a big guy. They've recently assembled all of his armor from his life, and he was indeed a very, very tall man. He was probably 6'2", 6'4", and this was at a time when a lot of people were not that big. I mean, so he was a commanding, authoritative figure, and as he turned 40, they've measured his waist from his armor, and he had a 53-inch waist and a 52-inch chest. And he was big, and he was commanding, and nobody went against Henry VIII. He was too commanding of an authority, and that's why I think he was so able to do so many things as a king, because he looked so kingly. And so Samuel comes into the house of Jesse, and he sees Eliab, and he says, "Ah, this is the one. This is definitely the kingly guy." And they go through all of Jesse's sons, and none of them, based upon their appearance, looks at them, but none of them are the ones that God is supposed to consecrate to be the next king of Israel. And then the Lord tells Samuel this important phrase. He says this, "But the Lord said to Samuel," this is verse 7, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I've rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things that man looks at, but he looks at the outward appearance. The Lord looks at the heart." Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks upon the heart. This is a fundamental principle of God. Man looks at the outward things, but God looks at the heart. Recently, I did a wedding for some people in our church, and they chose as their wedding text 1 Corinthians 13, where Paul writes pretty much the same thing. You'll remember in 1 Corinthians 13, Paul says, "If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but I have not love in the heart, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all the mysteries and the knowledge and have a faith that can move mountains," think of a faith like that, "but I have not love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but I have not love, I gain nothing." God doesn't just care about the outward appearance of you. God looks at the heart. And it's in the heart where God works, and it's in the heart where God looks for people of honor and integrity and character and people who can do his work within the body that he's given them. I think about today. It's amazing. I don't think in any time in history we have placed such a huge price on the outward appearance as we have today. Am I right about that? And I think it's because our American advertising executives and the people that work in the advertising industry are so clever and know exactly what appeals to people, and they put people on these advertisements and the screens, and they say, if you want to be important in this life, you have to have beauty. You have to have health. You have to have this car. You have to eat this food. You have to go to this institution. And they put all in front of us all these superficial things that say, this is what makes you. Now go get it. And it seems to me like in today's society, that is bigger than I think it has been in ever in any other society, because we are bombarded with it in newsprint, on the internet, on the TV, and every place we turn, it's always the superficial things. And you know what? We buy into it. We buy into it lock, stock, and barrel. We say what we are as a human being is what people can see about us, our beauty, our health, our wealth, our power, our strength. But see, what God says, it's in the heart. God finds you in the heart, and it's in the heart with your character where God is most concerned about it. I'm not saying if you've got those things, those are bad. But I am saying that if you have all those things and you don't have a character and a heart for God, they are meaningless to you. I think about men and today's society, and what is it with, I think if you want to be a powerful man, you've got to have money, you got to have a great car, you got to have a great house. And you have to have a great job. You have to be very, very well educated. And if you're very, very well educated, then you've arrived. And that's what's important. But you can have all those things, and if it's not in the heart, it means absolutely nothing. And think about women. What is it that they say about women today? You got to be in a size 2 dress, right? And if you're not in a size 2 dress, forget it. I remember I was reading an article about 6 months ago, the British Press, I think it was The Guardian, was yelling and had an article railing against the French models, because the French models, I guess, I did not know this, have been losing weight. losing weight to the point now that they're just skin and bones. And that's what they're presenting as what's important is to be like 5 pounds from death. And they're like, this is what beauty is. And the guardian's like, that's not at all what beauty is. And if you continue down this path, we're going to have a lot of young ladies who are influenced by that to think that that's all that's important is how thin you are. God looks at the heart. Why is it that we spend so much time looking at the outward appearance of other people, looking at the money of other people, the wealth, the fame, the prosperity, the beauty of other people? You know, Justin Bieber, right? You know, a 15-year-old kid. All the girls absolutely love Justin Bieber, right? Because he's just he's a handsome young man and he sings well. But he's only 15. What wisdom or character or knowledge could he possibly have? And yet, if he were to walk in here right now, you'd all go follow him. Well, I probably would too. But because our society, why is it? And I think it's because I think deep down in each and every one of us, we are a bit insecure about our own abilities, about our own beauty, our own wealth, our own health, and the things that God gave us and whether or not we can use that. We don't believe that God has given us any gifts that we can use. And we don't believe that we're worth anything in God's sight. And I think when we buy into that, we're in a scary place. But take a look again at the story of David. He's gone through all the sons, and none of them, based upon their outward appearance, none of them are the ones that are going to be the chosen king of Israel. And so Samuel asked Jesse, is that it? Because we've gone through all 7 sons and none of them are going to be anointed king. And God said, I'm going to come here today to anoint a king. Do you have any other sons? And Jesse thinks about it and he goes, well, I guess I've got that you know, the son that's out there tending the sheep. It's in verse 11 where he says this. He asked Jesse, are these all the sons you have? And Jesse says, well, they're still the youngest. Jesse answered, but he's tending the sheep. And Samuel said, send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives. Now, that word, the youngest, in the Hebrew, it doesn't really come across because it does mean young, but it also more normally means insignificant, has no worth, has no value. He's the youngest son of Jesse. Think about this. He's the youngest son of Jesse. The most important person of all of Israel is coming to the house, and Jesse brings all the 7 sons, but he doesn't bring David. He leaves David out with the sheep. That's what Jesse thought of David. He's not even important enough to bring in. He's the runt of the family. That's what that word, I love that translation. He's the runt of the family, and he's out there with the sheep. He's not even brought in. And he says, well, bring him in. And so they bring in David. And Samuel says, this is the one. Because God doesn't look at the outward appearance. God looks at the heart. And what God sees in David is a king. Even though you see a boy that shouldn't even be invited to the party, God sees a king. And take a look at the gifts that David learned while he was out there with the sheep. Everything that David needed to know as a king, much of it he learned when he was out tending the sheep. Think about that. When David was tending the sheep, he had lions and bears come and attack the sheep. It was David who found the courage to fight off the sheep, or fight off from the sheep, the lions and the bears. He learned how to use a slingshot and how to be very deadly accurate with that slingshot. Think about it. He'd learned that when he was at the sheep. When David ends up being in the service of Saul and Saul needs to be consoled, David plays the harp or the lute or the guitar. And where did he learn that? When he was out with the sheep. David has to learn how to lead the whole people of Israel. Where did he learn that? When he was out shepherding and herding the sheep. Everything that David learned from while he was shepherding, he thought was completely meaningless. And his brothers thought were completely meaningless. But yet, when he became king, it was those things that helped David to become a great king. I was reading a story. I wish I remember what this was because I just thought of this last night. But it was actually an internet video, and it was of a football player. And he grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, had no father, and they lived in poverty, and it was on the wrong side of the tracks, and he didn't have any of life's opportunities, and he was in school, and he was acting up, but then he got a college scholarship, and he went on to play football. He ended up playing for the NFL. He became a very wealthy man and a very successful NFL football player. And now he goes around doing motivational speaking. And you might know who I'm talking about. I don't know who it is. I can't remember the name of this guy. But they had a video interview of this guy, and they said, who was the most influential person you've ever met? Who was the most influential person in your life? And I thought, well, of course he's going to say his coach, or he's going to say his mom. You know, is there somebody that helped lead him? He said, I'll tell you the most important influential person in my life. He said, when I was in middle school, I got sent to the office all the time. And one time I was sitting outside the office and the janitor came by. And the janitor looked at me, and he'd seen me many, many times before. And he said, you know what those boys and girls are doing in that classroom over there? And he said, no, what? He said, they're learning how to be your boss. And then he walked away. He said that was the most profound incident in his life, because as he went home that day, he said, you know what? I don't want them to be my boss. I want to be my boss. And apparently it was at that point that he decided to clean himself up and to start applying himself in school. And from there, he went on to get a college scholarship, became an NFL football player. All from a comment of a guy, a janitor. So you think that God can't use other people, can't use the gifts that he has for you? Look inside you, and what gifts do you have? God can use those gifts. God has used those gifts, and God will continue to use those gifts. So if you say to yourself, God can't use my gifts, you are lying, because God doesn't look at your outward appearance and how the world looks at you. He looks at the heart. And if he finds in the heart character and strength of who you are and a love of God, he can use you no matter who you are. But we also think that we aren't loved by God. And for that, I'd like you to consider what happens when Samuel anoints David. When Samuel anoints David, the word there to anoint is Messiah. And Messiah in the Hebrew is translated into the Greek Christos. Jesus was the ultimate anointed one. Jesus is the one that King David points to. And you'll remember, whenever we talk about the birth of Jesus, we always talk about how important it is that he came of the line of Jesse and that he was a king like King David. He was the fulfillment of King David. And Jesus Christ was living in the heavenly realms, being praised by the cherubim and the seraphim and all the company of heaven. And he gave all that up to come down into heaven to be the one that would be cast out, to be the one that would be out with the sheep, to be the one that wouldn't be entered in. Why did God do that? Why would he leave his heavenly throne and come down and be nothing, be the Catan of the human race? He was the one rejected. Can any good come out of Nazareth? He did it for you. He did it because you would be rejected by God. You would be the one that would be cast out, because of your heart, because of the way that you look at the world, because you think that everything that's external is important and not in the heart. And God knew that he didn't want anything to do with you, and so he sent his son Jesus to this earth to take all the rejection of the world so that you would never be cast out. And if you think that you're not worth anything to God, think about this. God loved you so much that he sent Jesus to live a life of poverty and nothingness, to be rejected by mankind, to purchase each and every one of you. You are not worth nothing. I think about what it must have been like for David out there tending the sheep and knowing that the most important person of Israel is in there with his brothers, and knowing he probably would never even get to meet the guy. And then all of a sudden the servants come and say, David, he wants to meet you. So David dutifully leaves the sheep and he comes in, and Samuel meets him, and Samuel says, that's the one. And anoints David king of Israel. David, who thought he was nothing, was anointed king of Israel. Now, he doesn't become king just yet. We'll get into that. He gets king later on. But from that point on, he must have known, God sees something in me that nobody else does, and I'm going to serve him. My friends, God sees something in each and every one of you that nobody else may see. But you've been anointed by Him. You are a follower of Jesus Christ. You have the Holy Spirit living in your life. He can use you for His glory. You are not nothing. You are a precious child bought by Him. You are of a kingly nature through Jesus Christ. In His name, amen.